At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my good colleague, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, the Middle East. Jeff, I've been briefed by those who know in Jerusalem very carefully about where we are in the Gaza ceasefire. Since the Sharm el-Sheikh agreement, there seems to be a general interest in settling the Hamas-IDF war, and that right now the IDF is maintaining a so-called yellow line, which is a little more than 50% of Gaza patrolled by the Israelis. The rest of Gaza is Hamas and clans that are resisting Hamas and anti-Hamas militias, gangsters. But recently there was an episode where there was an ambush launched by presumably Hamas gunmen against the IDF, and the prime minister took to the television to announce airstrikes against Gaza. My information is that there is no expectation in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv, which is the headquarters of the IDF, that the war is over. There is no expectation that Hamas will surrender its weapons or even give over the last of the deceased corpses, that Hamas remains defiant, that it's regarding this as a ceasefire, as a time to rearm. The numbers suggest that there are 20,000 Hamas-loyal troops, fighters they're called, in the shrunken Gaza, but most of them are untrained teenagers with incomplete or inadequate weaponry. What is your measure of the ceasefire, Jeff? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening to you, John. I think you and I are in violent agreement, quite frankly. And first and foremost, it's just that. It's a ceasefire, and it's not this new dawn in the Middle East that President Trump talked about in his remarks before the Knesset when he visited Israel a week or so ago. And even at that time, I thought his remarks contrasted pretty broadly with the remarks by Prime Minister Netanyahu, who was very clear, I thought, in his comments that if Hamas did not lead up to the ceasefire, that Israel would resume hostilities and sort of finish the job. And it seemed to me at the time that there was no way we could get to a final solution because we're in an intractable position for any negotiation. The Israelis have been very clear. Their goal is the absolute complete destruction of Hamas. Now, they might talk about allowing some fighters to leave the country, but they demand the full disarming of Hamas. And Hamas's goal still remains, by their ideology, the destruction of the Jewish state. And, of course, like any organization or organism, they want to survive. I don't see how you find common ground between those two positions, and I don't see either side willing to compromise. And furthermore, as you suggested, John, when this war began over 2 years ago, and you and I were talking about it, the estimate at the time was Hamas had about 35,000 fighters total. Well, 68,000 Palestinians have been killed in this conflict. So unless we killed every Hamas fighter twice, A, significant number of civilians were in fact killed, and B, a lot of the fighters of today were not fighters there at the onset. And they are, as you described, young teenagers and others who have been recruited or motivated, if you will, by this war to rally behind Hamas's colors. So in that environment, I just don't see how you're going to come to a solution. And then finally, of course, there's a large proportion of Mr. Netanyahu's cabinet who really wants this war to continue. Gitar Ben-Gvir, who's his minister for national security, actually has been putting out tweets and social media posts talking about war and return to war and pushing all the Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip and filling it full of Jewish settlers. And even while the vice president was in Israel a few days ago, the Knesset passed some initial legislation on the annexation of the West Bank. So not only have we seen hostilities still ongoing in Gaza, We've seen Israel conducting airstrikes on the West Bank because of unrest there. We've seen Israel conducting airstrikes against Hezbollah positions in Lebanon because they haven't disarmed either. So this war, which includes all those locations, seems to be at best at a fragile ceasefire and somewhat problematical that that ceasefire can last indefinitely.
Iran, there is indication that debris is being cleared from one of the sites that was bombed by Israel. You will recall Israel bombed and then the B-2 raid in June. There's indication also that the Ayatollah remains defiant about the suspect nuclear weapons program and the location of the fissile material that was most dangerous, 60% enriched. All of that suggests we're on a rinse-repeat cycle in Iran as well, that the bombing in June was regarded by Iran as something to finesse and then go back to your provocations in the region. Do you see it any differently, dear Jeff?
No, sadly, I don't, Johnny. Unless the one thing we can't measure well is conditions within the country socially and economically. We do know the Iranian people are suffering very, very severely from high-scale unemployment, high levels of inflation, et cetera. And whether that will bring social unrest, that remains to be, in fact, seen. And clearly, the emphasis of the regime, if it's focused on recovery of its military forces, is not going to see any relief in terms of economic sanctions. In fact, we've seen those economic sanctions tightened by the Europeans who enforced the so-called snapback provisions from the initial JCPOA agreement, which is now no longer in effect. So the Iranians have the Hobson's choice of either resuming and racing towards a nuclear weapon or trying to find some method whereby they can negotiate with the Trump administration. And I haven't seen any signals on the Washington side that the Trump administration is interested in negotiating. And the signs in Iran are, as you suggest, John, trying to recover. But I think one thing they'll want to do is, as quickly as they can, not only move towards a nuclear weapon, but reinstate or try to refurbish their missile capability, which is the only real, at the moment, deterrent they have since their proxy forces in Lebanon and elsewhere have largely been depleted.
To Ukraine, there is no indication that I've heard or read or talked to for the week since we last talked that Putin is ready for the peace table, that the war will continue into the winter, and that the sanctions visited upon them, Lukoil and Rosneft being sanctioned, anybody doing business with them, is damaging, but not immediately. Putin is looking to win his maximum demands. Do you see any break in the action, Jeff?
Again, no, John. I mean, the State Department's Internal Intelligence Bureau actually dissented with a rather optimistic CIA assessment that Mr. Putin might be willing to negotiate and said there is very severe doubt in their analysis that the Russian president is prepared to negotiate an end to the war. At the same time, we've seen a redoubling of the effort by the Russians to conduct missile and drone attacks on energy infrastructure and Ukrainian cities. Second of all, of course, they very publicly announced the testing of a so-called nuclear-powered missile, which they claim has a range of 14,000 kilometers in an effort to rattle their nuclear saber. And I thought it was interesting when that announcement was made, John, it showed Mr. Putin wearing a uniform, which he's only done a couple of times. And usually to underscore, you know, sort of militant acts or, again, when he's rattling his nuclear saber. And then last but not least, whether you're listening to Putin or you're listening to Lavrov or you're listening to others, the Russians continue to insist on there'll be a ceasefire when the West addresses the root causes of the war. What are the root causes of the war? Well, for the Russians, it's the end of the regime in Ukraine. It's the resumption of economic ties and the end of sanctions. It's the end of military assistance to Ukraine. It's severe limits on the size of the Ukrainian military. It's Ukraine giving away the provinces that Russia claims. It's Ukraine announcing that it will never, ever join NATO. And it's Ukraine announcing, in fact, to include that Russian will now be the official language of Ukraine. In essence, what they've always insisted, they, Moscow, will negotiate when you're willing to surrender.
A couple of weeks ago, we had tomahawks in the conversation, but they seem to have either left the room or has there been an update on the possibility of tomahawks to Ukraine?
Well, it's again this vacillation by the president where he seems to make a threat and then he speaks to Vladimir Putin with a telephone or in Alaska and he backs away once again. I mean, he went to Alaska saying that if there was not a ceasefire, there would be severe consequences. And there's no ceasefire and there were no severe consequences. And you're quite right. He was talking, Mr. Trump, about giving Tomahawk cruise missiles to Ukraine on the day that Mr. Zelensky was to arrive a couple of Fridays ago. The day prior, he spoke to Mr. Putin by telephone, and quickly Trump reversed himself and said, well, there'll be no Tomahawks. We need to maintain them for ourselves. It would be hard for the Ukrainians to use them. It would be escalatory, using basically talking points that would be right out of Moscow's playbook. But at the same time, the Ukrainians have used Storm Shadow cruise missiles provided by the British, and also developed their own, in some cases, cruise missiles, adopting some old ground-to-sea missiles that have ranges up to 1,800 miles and been pretty effective in using those, striking oil and natural gas refineries deep into Russia, and in one case, not far from Kharkiv, striking a dam, which has made it very, very difficult in that particular part of Ukraine and the Russian Federation for the Russian military to maneuver.
Jeff, to your understanding, Tomahawk, does Russia have the air defense to stop several Tomahawk headed into the Kremlin?
They probably have. If you were just like launching one, perhaps they could do so. But the Tomahawk, what is most important about the Tomahawk is that it flies relatively slowly, but flies low, so-called nap of the earth, and can maneuver. And that makes it very, very difficult to acquire because it gets caught up in what people who run radars call the ground clutter. So it's hard to identify. And then, of course, it's also maneuverable. So if you only launch one, perhaps, but if you launch a bunch, more difficult. And again, then the targets you're going after, in many cases, the Ukrainians, by going after the oil and natural gas facilities, are betting on the fact that the Russians will maintain their air defenses primarily around what? Airfields, military installations, and cities. They definitely got enough missiles to, you know, spread them out to defend all those particular targets.
Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired artilleryman, CBS News. When we come back, Caracas. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.